Hello and welcome to the Age of Sigmar podcast from the wide world of wargaming. As always, I'm your host, Alex, alongside Jeremy, John, and our guest tonight, James. How's everyone doing tonight? John, what's on your workbench?
Hey, Alex, how you doing this week, my friend? You know what? I'm back in the saddle here. I'm fully recovered from the BAO, so I'm enjoying a nice glass of the Ain't Your Papa's Grappa, old bottle number 12 out of 100 from the Thumbprint Distillery. Delicious concoction at all times. You know I was going to do it. You knew it. But other than that, I've had a good week, you know, being back in town after some travel last week and or 2 weeks ago, and then I'm traveling again next week, so I had to concentrate my games in. I got in a couple games of 40K. I was able to activate my live stream in my garage while I'm traveling next week. I should be able to edit that and put that up on my YouTube channel for everyone to enjoy. Oh, it's going to be exciting. But anyways, it's the first time through. And then actually, I managed to get in a game of AOS, too. I was down at the Game Castle on Wednesday for basically League and AOS night. And a young man by the name of Tyler, who I had met at the BAO, actually, I think it was before the game started, maybe at lunchtime, when he wandered through. And he and I talked for about 20 minutes about AOS and tournaments and kind of his army and all that good stuff. And so he's a good guy. He's got lots of armies. 40K, all that good stuff, just starting with AOS. And he brought a little squig army, fully painted, beautiful Moon Mountain, all that stuff. And I brought my nasty Nurgle army in. It was a complete learning game, so I won't talk about the details of the game. We were doing mulligans. I was making suggestions to him. I'm like, okay, well, let's back this up. Let's try that again. Now consider this other thing. So we just had a fun learning game of AOS, and real nice to meet one of the guys. I will say that when I was talking to him at the BAO, in the middle of us talking and me telling him about the BAO tournament, Tyler goes, kind of gets this weird look on his face, and he looks at me and he goes, coconut wine. I said, oh, you got me. So he had recognized my voice and my stories of the coconut wine. So that's pretty much what I was up to this week. How about you, Jeremy? Tell me what has been going on up there in the Great Northwest.
Well, for me, John, in the great hot Northwest right now, I'm enjoying some fine Japanese whiskey from Centauri. If you've never had it before, treat yourself. It's called Toki. It's relatively affordable for the quality you get in comparison to some older scotches. Now that the plug is done and I'm going to collect that check, I've been playing mostly 40K, not because I want to, but mostly because I'm going to Boise Cup for a team like kind of tournament reunion. Art the team who runs Boise Cup is a part of my team, and all the team. It's like the team reunion every year for us is at Boise Cup, and I'm gonna go play my first event of 40K this year, and I'm bringing Yennari Harlequins. Post obviously the White Dwarf complete like change up of Yennari rules, which is great because basically I'm playing an Age of Sigmar army in a 40K universe, so. Got a few.
That's awesome. And you can play Yennari without being that guy anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm a mostly melee army in the world of nothing but shooting Grim Darkness. So it's going to be an ecstatic fun of me probably going maybe 1-4. That's the record I'm going for.
Nice.
See, this is fun. This is the exact opposite of a Feel Badsy's army. You know, that's the army where your opponent will be buying you a drink early. And... yeah, you might max in sports for that little effort, right?
that was my goal. And then I played a visiting friend of mine, Nick, who came to see a concert. And he borrowed one of my Thousand Suns on me, and he played, a tournament-winning list with it. And he got tabled by the end of turn two. So maybe my 1-4 goal is a little bit optimistic. So maybe it will be, 2-3, guys. You know, that's 100% improvement. But other than that, I did get some games in with my Gits, and I really, really enjoy playing the Gits. They're not exactly what I call super solid, top tier army, you know, and I'm, which is more the list I'm used to playing, as you know already. But it is so much fun playing Gits, and I really hope this general handbook drops some of the cost of some of the Gits units. But other than that, James?
That seems like a fun army to play, except your back might be a little sore afterwards, right?
It's not too bad. I mean, like, even the squid heavy army is like only like a, like not that many. It's actually literally almost the same amount of models as my fire
saber. You gotta do a lot of stretching still.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, most of the stretching is from when your opponent has to pick up his model. Some of the net spells they're getting nuked with. But I was gonna say, you know, that's good times. I'm really excited to see what Matthew gets. You know, how the army, he's painting it for me, so I'm really excited to see it. He finishes up. I'll probably be playing that OFCC, and after that, I'll be gifting it to my my close friend Gareth to get it, to force him into playing AOS. Basically, it's like kind of like a gift.
That's a power move. Oh, you don't want to get into this game? Here's a nicely painted, fully painted 2,000 point army. Get on with it.
Hey, I mean, he doesn't have any excuses anymore. It's mostly because he's a dad now. It's like, oh, I never have time to build, paint, blah, 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 blah. Too bad. Now you have an army. Get out of the house. Anyway, that's it for my kind of like week. I'm really excited for Boise Cup in 2 weeks. And then, you know, the huge amount of GTs we're going to have for AOS in the Northwest in the next coming month. But, you know, James, what about you? What's on your workbench, man?
Hey, everyone. Great to be on the show. On my workbench in front of me, on my left, I've got a pale ale called Dance of Days from right here in Washington, D.C., the Atlas Brew Works. It's described as a citra and mosaic pale ale. I drink quite a lot of it. It's fantastic stuff. So plug for them. Local craft beers all the way. And on my right-hand side, I've got two plague furnaces I'm currently in the process of converting into Screaming Bells. Having decided that a Grey Seer on a Screaming Bell is one of the best units in AOS.
You know, it's funny that you're doing that, because that's what happened to one of my plague furnaces that had never seen the table. Turns out you can magnetize that great sensor and the bell goes on there quite nicely.
Mm-hmm. And then you just swap some monks out and put the Rat Ogre on the back of the bell.
I didn't bother with that. Do you think that's really necessary?
Okay. Well, I mean, he has a dedicated attack profile.
Fair.
With four sort of big Rat Ogre swings at two damage each. So he's
I can't wait. I think he's you guys put all this work on these conversions, and then the point hike on the next general handbook is going to make you guys put it back in the shelf. I can't wait.
Yeah. we will see. I think I'm steering away from like the things that you're seeing most frequently in the Skaven list. So I don't have any Jazales. I don't have Warp Lightning Cannon. I don't have any plague monks. I think plague monks in particular are the things that are going to go up in the next general's handbook, is personal sort of view, looking at what you see on the tabletop in tournaments with Skaven lists at the moment.
That's only because you basically
you just shut your mouth.
Don't worry,
they are undercosted, if anything.
Yes undercosted. They should be zero points, even in fact negative points. You can't even take him. Anyway, sorry, James. Please keep going of your lovely English voice.
Why, thank you. No, that's it. I mean, this weekend I played in a tournament called the Triumph GT. It was up in Parsippany, which is a town in northern New Jersey, sponsored by and run by the Mythico Studios, which is a major game store painting studio up in that part of the country. It was a good event, good weekend. Yeah,
great. And we do want to jump in on that, since that was the event of the weekend. In terms of workbench, I myself am not drinking alcohol, so I'm a little less exciting tonight. I'm actually drinking a coffee, a cold brew that I created for myself today for Pacific Northwest, a West Portland brewery called Grounds and Hounds Coffee. So they every pound saves a hound, they call it. Enjoying myself some cold brew. And in terms of workbench activities as well, I do got to say, Jeremy, you played against our good friend Nick, our good friend Tasty Taste, this weekend with your 40K. I also played 40K and was reminded of why I don't play 40K.
Wait a second, what's that?
Well, no, I played some 40K, and I do play it on a regular basis, just not super regular. But you know, it was Nick and some custodes versus me and my Necrons, and you know, very quickly we played a full game, but it wasn't a great game.
I want to tell the audience, by the way, because then, you know, for those who don't know, I'm French, and they try to play the entire game in a French accent because I was there watching the game. And it lasted about one turn because Alex was so salty at the top of turn one that he just couldn't get, you know, just the tears and the salt was so solid for the rest of the game. He forgot he was supposed to play in
French. I mean, accent. Tears and salt should make for a better French accent, though.
I know. Yeah. He just hasn't figured that out yet. We'll work on it.
No, not yet. Not yet. No. And to be honest, once Nick and I were in character, in French character, he called it. Jeremy called it. He said, yeah, we'll wait. We'll see how long this lasts, Alex. So yeah, he was right. I brought my AOS just in case. Unfortunately, didn't get to play it, but I'm very excited to try a few new lists right before everything changes. So, you know, the General's Handbook, of course, comes out in, 2 weeks? A little bit less than that. So, you know, get your games in while the games are good, right? I'm excited to see some of the changes here. And I do want to talk about those a little later as well. But, you know, we did have that event, as James mentioned. You know, it was that Mythico event. And, you know, it's in New Jersey. Is that right, James?
Yeah, that's right. Parsippany, New Jersey. Maybe about like 30 miles outside of New York City. It was at a police athletic center. So the actual like tournament during the day was dry. Which is unusual for us, to be honest.
Did you play better or worse?
It did feel a little strange being completely sober in game three on the Saturday. I won my third game on a Saturday, which is normally the game that I lose. So maybe there's something in that, you know?
No, there isn't. It was coincidence.
That's amazing. So, so you said, and then they were non-dry on Sunday.
No, it was equally dry on Sunday. I think because it's like a youth center, athletic center that they said, okay, you're probably going to have to like brown bag if you want to actually have a drink at the table and that kind of thing. So, in the end, somebody did hand me towards the end of my third game. Somebody handed me a slushy cup that was a little bit spicy. Overall, it was quite a dry tournament. It was excellent, though. Do you want me to get into the detail of the tournament now?
Well, yeah, we want to definitely see what your experience was at the event, okay. And then of course we do want to then go through some of the final standings there. And you yourself didn't do too bad. You got fifth place, and this was almost a major. It had just around 35 players. Is that right?
Yeah, 34 players. It was a very good standard of play and a good standard of player. There was quite a number of the top players from the East Coast were playing. So two of the Team USA ETC players, mm-hmm. Sam Gould, who won Adepticon, Mike Vaginos, both played. Roger Barker, Chai Tsola, they've both done very well at the East Coast events, Adepticon, also Nova across to Adepticon. And then a number of the most competitive players from my region, the sort of Mid-Atlantic, the whole DC, Maryland, Virginia area. So it was very, very good competitive tournament. As you said, I did pretty well. I was quite pleased with my performance. I went 4-1 and came in fifth overall. I was sort of third out of fourth of the 4-1 people because I missed a couple of secondary objectives. But it was a decent performance. I lost one game, the second game, to a host of Sinesh army by a gentleman called Edgar Hernandez, who was he finished eighth overall, went 3-2. But at the end of day one, he was one of the three hosts of Slaanesh that were in the top five after the third game. So my list, I run Skaven, as always. And my list was, I ran for the first time the Forge World Clawlord on Brood Horror, who's 160 points versus a regular Clawlord of 100 points, but he's a bit of a beat stick. So, I mean, you can check out his profile, but his brood horror has 6 attacks, 3s, 3s, neg 1, 2 damage. So pretty good swings from the mount. And then he's on top swinging 3 times with a 3s, 3s, neg 2 D3 damage. So he can do some serious damage himself.
What's that Brutal Fury command trait doing for
him? Exactly. That's the next point I was going to make. That Brutal Fury command trait that once per game, you can pop that and get an extra 3 attacks on him. So potentially, yeah, so he's putting out 12 attacks, all with rend, either neg 1 or neg 2, multiple damage across it. And for a kind of a little guy, 160 point model, he can put out the pain. I didn't find that I actually had him doing that much, because he was primarily there to buff up my, give my extra attacks to my unit of 40 storm vermin.
Oh, yeah.
So I think in future, I'll probably be reverting back to the regular Claw Lord. Because that command ability to give those guys extra attacks is huge. And it's the main reason that you take that. Alongside that, obviously, I had the 40 storm vermin with a Vermin Lord Warbringer. Mm-hmm. Again, like he's quite punchy himself, but he's really there again as a support character, because his command ability gives you the ability to reroll hits and wounds of 1. And so when you're 40 storm vermin hitting on 3s, wounding on 2s, neg 1 damage, when you're rerolling 1s, you're getting through an awful lot of attacks.
Mm-hmm.
Plus he's got the dreaded death frenzy spell. D3 units get death frenzy.
Oh yeah.
So that's the purpose of that. And so that's the sort of hammer side of the list. I've then
now, there seems to be something missing. Where's your warp seer?
The warp seer I dropped this time. So that was the change to my list. I dropped the warp seer, and instead I put in the warlock bombardier and 15 acolytes.
All right.
Ooh, yeah. Nice.
So the acolytes, when you get them, you put the more warp power spell on them from the bombardier. So that they're re-rolling hits, wounds, and then doing D3 plus 1 damage at neg 2 rend with their 15 grenades, or nicely screened behind some clan rats, is the sort of the other one of my horns, or the other one of my pincers alongside the storm vermin in that list. And then just sort of round it out with 20 clan rats, 40 clan rats, a grey seer on screaming bell, and a grey seer on foot. And that was my list. I was pretty happy with the performance of it overall. I will make a couple of changes. I think had quite a long discussion on the drive home with one of your regular co-hosts, Garrett, about what we could do to change up the list. And I think potentially,
does that involve more endless spells? I was surprised you only brought the one.
We brought the one that matters.
Of course.
It does.
Select Skaven Tide, it automatically adds it to the list in Warscroll.
No way. They're like, trust me, you're going to have
get
this.
Get ready for 120 point vortex.
Yeah, I think that's going up in points. I think, like, particularly for a long time, I thought the General's Handbook would be too close to the release of the actual
Battle Tome
Codex 40K in my brain. Battle Tome back at the start of the year, but because of the way they're doing the General's Handbook release with the points being in like a separate little pamphlet, I think we're going to see probably not Host of Slaanesh, but everything sort of prior to that potentially getting some points adjustment.
I hope not. I was really banking on anything from the beginning of the year is kind of sacrosanct at this moment. That's how they've always said it. You cannot give and take away.
I want to, there
has to be some compensation for how long we suffered with no Battle Tome before taking away the power. And all things considered, when I look at the top of who's winning tournaments, it's not Skaven.
Well, they're certainly doing well overall. I would definitely still, they may not be winning every event, but they're easily in the top 5 of every event consistently.
Yeah. Right behind the Flesh Eater Courts.
Recent rumor that we did hear about the General's Handbook, though, is that this extra booklet or even a potential download day of release might have some additional point changes to some of these more recent armies, which would also include things like my favorite army that exists right now.
Yeah.
Fire Slayers.
It probably will. And I hope that, sorry, pardon the French, fucking do it. But I was going to. I was gonna.
Maybe they can make your buffs holy within, like
I know,
everybody
right?
else's buffs.
Fuck. I was gonna ask you, James, a question for. Well, two questions. Firstly, one is more of a recommendation. The second is an actual question.
Yep.
This is for the audience here, because even though I'm pretty usually knowledgeable about the rules, I don't even fucking know how this works. If you have dreaded death frenzy and death frenzy on a unit, does it that model swing twice when it dies, or just once?
It will swing twice, and the reason for the reason for I have that, like, that list I play does have the capability of having double death frenzy. So you have regular death frenzy on the book, your spell out of the book for your scream, your Grey Seer on Screaming Bell, and then dreaded death frenzy is the War Scroll spell for the Vermin Lord Warbringer. And the reason that, like, obviously we looked at all of the sort of rules and the similar abilities across the game, and when you get into the Khorne FAQ, in there you'll find that there is an FAQ or an errata that says, if I have an ability that lets me swing, if I have multiple abilities that let me swing when I die, do they stack? Therefore, can I attack twice when I die? And the answer is yes, you can attack twice when
there
you
we
die.
Go.
Yeah.
I just picture the internet laughing in Vermintide.
laughing in
Vermintide. Having done this at Adepticon, having double death frenzied up my Storm Vermin, having them swinging into those witch elves with the shields that can do mortal wounds on a six, that combat phase alone can take about 45 minutes of your game if you do that. So, word of caution to anybody who
I can only imagine.
Frenzy, you ain't going to get through five turns if you're managing double death frenzy.
Death frenzy resolves, like, you have to pile in the model and then swing, right?
Yeah.
It's not like, so, like, you literally have, like, technically you're supposed to, per rule per se, you're supposed to resolve this at one in a model, which is crazy. Mm-hmm. But it can get in situations where, like, if you're 40 men Storm Vermin is kind of stretched because of combat, like, on one side, you're not going to be able to death frenzy everybody that gets removed effectively, right?
No, you'd be surprised. I've rarely struggled to actually get them to pile in and do death frenzy, because, like, Storm Vermin, because they've got a 2-inch range on their weapons.
Yeah, fair enough.
Like, you're not in a single line spread across the board. You tend to have two or three ranks, so you've always got the models within 5 inches. So you just sort of say, okay, imagine the guys in the middle are getting killed. All I'm doing is plucking them. And then when I pile in for my activation, I just nudge the unit back together. So there are certain situations where you might be strung out and not be able to make full use of it. But you can normally, with the ability to sort of strike from 5 inches, you can pretty much get most of them in there.
Well, that's bloody terrifying.
Yeah, it's great. I love it. You need to, with the Storm Vermin, like, you've got to buy in, you've got to invest. You need to take a unit of 40 of them or they're not effective. I mean, there's 500 points straight off the bat. You need at least one. Exactly, it is. You need at least one.
Right, that's a lot of points.
To drop that command ability to give them extra attacks. And then ideally, you need that Vermin Lord Warbringer so that they can reroll hits and wounds of one as well. So you're looking at a sort of 860 points of investment to actually have that devastating hammer.
But you have a unit that basically has double or triple activation in some cases in combat phases, which is pretty nutty. That was my question. My recommendation next is, have you considered running the Soul Seeker, the Boatman, for your acolytes?
Thought about it. Not necessarily for the acolytes, but I think I've seen it used a couple of times. So it was used this weekend. Mike Vaginos was running it to basically fling a unit of 40 buffed up plague monks across the board. So he does his prayers first, gets them buffed up, and then uses a boatman to throw them across the board. And the other one
was that pretty effective. I've been planning to do that myself.
He won three games. And did pretty well. I mean, he's a good player. But it seemed to work fairly well. The other one that I saw, there was another Skaven player. And let me just see if I can pick out his... So the guy was called, and he's one of the basement wargamers. His name is Matt Obringer. He had the bridge.
Oh, the Soul Screen bridge.
He was using the bridge, and he was using the bridge to drop units of storm fiends into place, so that turn one he could start lighting you up with the storm fiends. and I mean, he went 3-2 as well, I think. He went 3-2, so that was a fairly effective little ploy he'd got there. So I think, yeah, certainly.
Seems like a nice ploy, but yeah, not enough. Right.
And I love it. He had a real sort of Skaven soup. He had everything from like a little unit of Night Runners,
Jazales.
Yeah, Squad of Three Jazales, Storm Fiends, Clan Rats. He had the lot. He was taking quite a broad list.
Menagerie.
Menagerie. Yeah.
Except for not bringing the actual menagerie list, right? The menagerie to battalion. Well, I'm glad that, you know, that there was such a widespread at the event too. And real quick, before we go into any sort of standings, you know, you've told us a little bit about your experience, you know, in particular, you know, your loss. But was there a game that stood out to you out of all five that was just really remarkable in particular?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, my my third game, I played against a Deepkin list, and it was an amazing game. It was a full eels list. The guy had 9 shield eels and 18 stabby eels, plus Volturnos and 2 of the what's the character that lets them start off the board.
Soul Scryer.
Yeah. So he had 2 Soul Scryers and Volturnos, and then all the eels. It was the mission where he couldn't start them off the board, though. And so he overloaded one side of the board. I sort of split fairly evenly between the two sides. Obviously, you've got, I mean, sure, most listeners are familiar with the layout of the mission. You've got 4 objectives, effectively 1 in each corner. You can't have any reserves, and you score multiple points for holding your opponent's objective and only a single point for holding yours. And so he made me go first. He then tried to get a double turn, 1 into 2, succeeded, overloaded one side, and threw all of the eels, less 1 squad of 3, and Volturnos into my one side, which had my 40 Storm Vermin, my Warbringer, and my Claw Lord on Brood Horror. He pretty effectively managed to do some damage, but because I'd had that turn to buff myself up, I got the Death Frenzy up. So as soon as he activated one unit, I would Death Frenzy into the one next to it to try and cut down his actual ability to do damage to me. Over the course of 2 combat phases, he pretty much wiped out that side of the board for me, of my troops there. But by that point, I'd flung over my Warp Lightning Vortex onto that side of the board as well. So I was slowing him down, stopping him running away down there once he'd sort of broken through. So it came down to the turn 5 roll for priority. Because what I was doing was I was sprinting Clam Rats across the board to try and just overwhelm those objectives on the other side of the board with the weight of bodies. I won the turn five deployment, and then did a kind of a, and I was quite proud of this little move, a bit of a sort of Kansas City shuffle of the Screaming Bell over to then use him to guarantee a 6-inch run on my Clam Rats to fling them across. So you've got 1 squad of Clan Rats with a bell. So I activate the 1 squad of Clan Rats first to run up to the bell. Then I activate the bell to fling the bell across the board towards the second unit of Clan Rats so that I've got the bell within 6 inches so that I can get the 6-inch run and chuck the last lot of Clan Rats onto the objective to win the game. So it's like slingshotting units.
Ooh, that is nice. Turn 5, I like that.
To be able to pull it off. So that was an epic game. And I think we both had a lot of fun. huge.
And the plus huge. 2 inch to run on the clan rats always catches
people. That 14 inch move that you can get with them without any cogs or anything like that. And you can do the same with the storm vermin, but it tends to be the clan rats that I'm just trying to use almost to outflank people and get around, because they don't anticipate really any speed coming from the list. And so having that in your back pocket is great. It was a lot of fun. Really good tournament.
That's huge. Yeah. You know, taking a look at his list, you know, that was the best possible mission for you to play on, for the exact reason that you mentioned. I think it's hilarious that he has over 1500 points in eels, 1520 to be exact. And yeah, for our listeners out there, between the eel breakdown, and you can also see this list in Best Coast Pairings, but, you know, it is 18 more Sargard and then 12 Ishland Guard split up between 6 and then 2 to 3. So it's definitely just a lot of eels, you know? And this is a
hard... like 120 plus wounds of eels there. It's like having his own weird swarm.
I will mention, though, like, the total commitment is actually not that bad for Deepkin, mostly because he has two Soul Scryers and they can target the same unit with their plus 3 inches to charge. So they have a plus 6 inches to charge. It makes, like, most games, actually, you're better off setting them up on the table than outflanking them.
I mean, in this matchup in particular is what
I mean. The only other option I would have said, like, maybe as a defense for James, is just to set up the Storm Vermin in the middle of the table to challenge if he decides to go after either, like, one of his flanks. Yeah. And then just basically, if he chooses to go after the Storm Vermin, then he's not fighting on the objectives, right? So, like, sorry, this is from a tactical perspective. I just, knowing because I've played Deepkin for so long, that, like that total commitment actually is a really good mission for... Deepkin, actually, it's better than any of the other missions because it prevents armies from basically challenging your objectives through reserve mechanics, which means you have, like, free field to just commit the eels to anywhere. Yep. So, yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I would say it's good for eel-heavy armies.
Yeah, if you're bringing... Sure. I mean, the thralls aren't slower or nothing, but they're just like, yeah, definitely the eels are for sure effective. So,
yeah. I mean, I did force him to keep a couple of units of three out of the fight so that he could sit on my gnaw holes rather than allowing me the opportunity to sort of teleport through the gnaw hole and seize an objective in the backfield.
Yeah, did you put...
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's the most effective thing they do is tie down a couple enemy units.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing you put one on each of challenging each of his home objectives and one in the middle of your table or something. Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Oh, gnaw holes are... an inconvenience, we'll put it that way. I mean, they're probably one of the best terrain pieces in, like, available to any army for free, effectively.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, you know, James, you were, of course, fifth place overall out of 34. So, again, congratulations. It's a fantastic standing.
Well done.
You know, I'm taking a look. The individuals who got fourth, third, second, and first. Yep. You know, it is interesting that a Maggotkin player got fourth. I'm looking at a Dan Caravan. Yep. You know, taking a look at his list, I know that you didn't play him. However, you know, looking at the Plague Monks, like we talked about a little earlier, it is a Maggotkin of Nurgle list with, you know, the a Sorcerer, Rodigus, Chaos Lord on a Demonic Mount. I know he's got a bunch of Plague Bearers and Blight Kings, but it was interesting to see those Plague Monks in his list. Now, of course, that's not something.
Well, you know, one thing to mention about those Plague Monks, because I was trying those out on my, I actually ran my Nurgle list this last week with Plague Monks in it, and they will make a 16-inch move without any consideration. You've got a 6-inch base move, 6-inch run that's plus one, and then you get an extra 3 inches when your Guo is slinging the bell. So your 16-inch move across the board, they are going to catch some people by surprise.
Bloody terrifying. Yeah. Anyway,
and disgusting. Yeah, and it's disgusting.
All of the spells from Nurgle can be cast on them. They have the Nurgle keyword. One thing that was called out about this list was quite interesting was that a lot of the benefit he got was actually from the unit you didn't mention there, Alex, the Contorted Epitome. So he had a Slaanesh ally into this army as well with the Epitome, which, as we know, is a fantastic unit. And he was using that really effectively.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh, I hadn't considered that, because of course you could bring a little Slaanesh ally with your Nurgle.
That'd be fun.
Hmm.
That is interesting. Honestly, I read over that.
I was assuming he was bringing it for magic defense more than anything, because of the reroll of Unbind. And then making your opponent's swing last is also pretty useful.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since you don't have Death Frenzy on your for your Plague Monks.
Keeping those, something to keep those Plague Monks alive so they can actually swing. Because Plague Monks are great. They will put out a world of hurt, but they do sort of fall over in a stiff breeze. They need protecting.
Yeah.
Now, looking at the person who got third place, you know, that Chizola, great name. you know, this is definitely something where we are most likely going to see a change in the next General's Handbook with this army, in particular with Daughters. You know, pretty standard list, a competitive list without Marathi. You know, we're looking at a Hag Queen with a Cauldron of Blood, or a Slaughter Queen, rather. A couple of, three Hag Queens, a Bloodwhack Medusa, 60 Witch Elves, and 20 Blood Sisters. So, you know, there's only so much we can talk about with this list, because I think we all, and our listeners are probably all well aware, that this is a great list. It's hyper effective in most missions, and it just hits like a truck.
Yeah, this is pretty much the list me and Matthew basically thought built for Daughters of Cain when we were trying to see if like this was a fun like list to play. So it's not a fun list to play. No offense to anybody who plays Daughters of Cain, but it's boring as hell to play. but not offense to anyone who plays it. It's a very good list, and the fact that like it took this long for people to start like using Blood Sisters instead of what's her name? Marathi is like shocking to me, because they're as a guy who plays 30 Hearthguards and Fire Slayers, like Blood Sisters are like the OG version of that. It's just very shocking to me.
I think Alex. The more time you invest in Blood Sisters now, I think post General's Handbook, that's going to be the area of the Daughters of Cain that does not get changed too much in points value. I don't, because it was all Witch Elves that were in the list to start with. I think that they're going to be pretty safe from a points upgrade. So the better you get with Blood Sisters now, like Temple Nests and all of those type of lists, the long term, like the legs that list is going to have post GHB when compared to like a list with 90 Witch Elves in it, which is not going to be affordable anymore post GHB. So I think the more snakes you get in there, the better right now.
I agree.
On top of that, I will say though that he was not running any battalions, which was
shocking. No.
Which is unusual. That is unusual for any Daughters of Cain, because they have
some pretty surprising
battalion options in the game. But I think I see why. It's because he wants to run as many Hack Queens on foot as he possibly can, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to say though that like we missed over one important fact about Dan Caravan's list. He technically beat the second place player. I believe he beat Chris Bergman, which we'll go talk about in a second. But he also played Dutch Adams for first place. So he went to this event with this Maggot King list, which you know kind of is like a crossbreed between Skaven and Maggot King, and did very well. We didn't even touch this, but like, you know, yes, the Epitome is an interesting unit selection, and it makes complete sense in the list. And I think you'll see that more popular in any Nurgle list. But he did bring Chaos Knights. Like,
10 Chaos Knights.
When was the last time you saw Chaos Knights on a table?
At John's event, Winter Wars, a Slaaneshi Chaos Knights by Michael Schwartz.
Well, also the guy that won the event with Nurgle was running Chaos Knights in his Nurgle list.
Chaos Knights and Nurgle are really good, mostly because they're there to get you like contagion points early because of speed, and then secondly, they're Blaze of Purification on them is actually pretty good in case like you know the Skavens die the first turn or second turn. I just thought it was really like bravo Dan Caravan. So that was my little spiel So let's talk about Chris Bergman's list.
Now, you know, you're pretty experienced at this because I do believe you encountered Chris at Barrier Open. Is that right, Jim?
Yeah, I not only did I encounter him, we had a good game. We played on round three, I believe, at BO, if our memory serves me right. I think his list is effectively identical to the one he brought to BAO. No, that's mostly because my memory fails me exactly what his list was at BAO.
No, I'd have to compare them to see what the differences are. But at first glance, it looks pretty much the same.
One of the things actually we talked to post of our game before I go too much into is that like I recommended that he would probably add more heroes to his list for Slaanesh, but I guess that was not it. Maybe just time crunch and so forth.
Interesting, Jeremy, because when we looked at his list versus Dutch Adams, the overall winner. Dutch had the six characters in his Supreme Sybarites battalion, which means he's guaranteed to be getting those extra command points at least at the start of the game.
Yeah, and it's for me, it's not just the extra command points, but it's gross. the ability to make sure you always have like a model to summon. And then it's secondly, like the extra depravity points you're going to get out of it. So it's just like, I mean, until Games Workshop gets his head out of its rear end about the depravity mechanic, it's just seems like you always gotta have to invest in like I feel like four heroes is like the minimum you have to take for Hosta Slaanesh. Like you if you're not taking four, you're not doing it right effectively.
It's a cheap good summoning. If you're not maximizing it, what are you gonna do? And I know the last time I played Michael Schwartz, I think we were rolling into turn three and he had seven command points already.
Especially since they have access to some like really
ridiculous
cheap supporting heroes. And like the Raptress, like which is really good on the table at sniping other heroes or just basically, you know, making wizards not happy. It's just like there's no reason to overload on like your basic troop units or everything else. Just, you know, let your heroes carry you through the day, basically kind of thing.
And with that, you know, it is important to try to look at, you know, that final list, the list that won it all, Dutch Adams' list. And you're right. I glanced at it a little earlier, but taking a closer look, I mean, six characters between the Keeper of Secrets, the Contorted Epitome, the Mask, and two Bloodbringers. And then all the rest of the list is just, you know, 50 Demonettes and five Hellstriders, you know, totally knowing that you are just going to be summoning a bunch of units on the board beyond this. It's great.
And with this, and the sort of the Godseekers host, the sort of like the Stormcast Chamber choice of the Slaanesh lists. With that, you're generating extra depravity points for charging as well. You're generating extra depravity points for using your bit of scenery to sacrifice, but then you end up resisting the mortal wound that you took anyway, that kind of thing. So when I played Edgar Hernandez, as I said at the start, the top of turn two, so in his turn two summoning phase at the end of his movement phase, he just ticked over the 60 points to allow him to summon new Keeper of Secrets in turn two when I'd killed two in turn one.
Oh my God.
So I know. Dutch went one better in his round four game against Matt Barker, and he had 66 depravity points by the top of turn two.
That's fluffy.
I know.
At the top of turn two? What the hell?
The amount of depravity points that these lists can generate, particularly, I mean, bear in mind, like against Nurgle lists, Matt Barker's list, you'll see it down there. He has a lot of Blight Kings.
Yeah.
So Blight Kings are going to give up a lot of depravity points. And that's basically what happens. But I think like my strategy for playing against them is like you just now, having played it a couple of times now against Hosta Slaanesh, I've lost both games. I think I am learning. Basically, your game needs to be on point. Your screening of your own heroes needs to be perfect. And you need to accept that they are still going to generate a lot of depravity points because they're going to throw their own heroes at you or their own multi-wound models at you so that they can generate depravity points. So just accept that that's going to happen, protect your own heroes and concentrate on whittling them down as much as possible. Absolutely kill the all the demonettes that are going to be there. But at the same time, don't lose sight of the fact that the characters are the ones that do the summoning. So if you can get to their characters, you're going to stand a chance. In my game with Edgar Hernandez, we did a calculation at the end of the game. I destroyed 2,060 points worth of models in the game, and he still had 780 left on the table at the end of the game.
No.
Wow.
So, the summoning is real, people. gravity points is a strong mechanic. No,
James, this sounds like some sage advice by a sage player.
It's this is another reason why, like,
no doubt,
needs to make a comeback into the meta, just because, like, that Hina Knights, like, do not do well against, like, mostly shooting armies, just because the chaff units are one wound, so you're not generating any, like, depravity points. You don't really have fly in the army, so you can't just get across the chaff units. You're fast, but you're not that fast effectively.
You've hit the nail on the head perfectly there as to why I lost my game with Edgar. If you look at his list, he gives one of his two Keeper of Secrets, the Windrider Cloak. I failed to screen properly.
Of course.
That flies over my screen and kills my acolytes in turn one.
Yep. Wow.
Therefore, neutering my shooting and getting into my back line in turn one. That was the difference in the game.
Yep.
And that was my own, like, I am a good enough player that I should be screening that out properly. I failed to do so in that game, and it cost me the game.
Yeah.
I have one critical question to ask you about that, James.
Oh,
are we talking old metal acolytes or some kind of conversion? Yeah? Oh, nice. We're talking like one blister at a time. You caught those bad boys?
I bought them on eBay over the course of about a year.
Nice.
Old metal models.
Oh, man.
Quirky, dated, horrible looking things.
Yeah.
I applaud you, sir. I applaud you. I've managed to acquire two of those for my collection. It is my dream to eventually run a squad of them, but that is pretty awesome.
They're great in game. They're still terrible in combat. Have a 6+.
Of course they should be.
But
they're so good at shooting. They're so good. Mm-hmm.
They are fantastic.
Well, you know, the rats are real. The Skaven are really strong. But you know, one thing that they do suffer with is low bravery, and that does lead us to our unit review for tonight. Rather than actually reviewing a unit, we're actually going to be reviewing a battalion, with Legion of Grief that came out very recently with the Forbidden Power books. The idea of having a Night Haunt centric Legion and Nagash army gives us the idea, or potentially the implication, that Night Haunt might be not as readily available in a Legion of Nagash list outside of a Grief list. But one positive note from all of these potential changes that might be right around the corner is the fact that there's a lot of bravery mechanics that are involved in a Legion of Grief. And, because the Night Haunt keyword is one of the central units allowed in this army, that would also, correlate to a lot of the Night Haunt battalions from the Night Haunt Battle Tome. And we want to take a look at the Shrieker Host, which is one that I believe goes overlooked more often than not. You know, Jeremy and I are relatively experienced in Night Haunt and Death players overall. And, you know, I think, Jeremy, you and I both thoroughly enjoy the Shroud Guard battalion, and I like some of the ones with the chain gas as well. But the Shrieker Host has a lot of great benefits. Now, before we get your thoughts on it, Jeremy, for our listeners, the Shrieker Host is a Night Haunt battalion. It's not a Night Haunt allegiance. It's just a War Scroll battalion that is all Night Haunt keyword. It's one Tomb Banshee, two units of Dreadscythe Harridans, and two units of Miramorn Banshees. Now, Jeremy, you and I have talked in detail about this list, or this battalion. What stands out to you with it, especially in the Legion of Grief?
Yeah, and I just want to disclose a caveat, right? We're making the assumption here that you're allowed to take the Night Haunt battalions and Legions of Grief.
You are.
Well, I'm making the assumption. I think we're all making that assumption based on the wording. But the point, what strikes me firstly is the utility out of the actual units in the battalion. It's usually units that get overlooked in most Night Haunt lists. Well, you know, sometimes you'll see one unit more. Warming Banshees, whatever their name is, but you won't see the other basically the other the other units very often. In Legion of Grief mechanic, the reason why I think they're more interesting for most for it to take is because with the stacking bravery debuff, they're basically all of those units and the battalion comes to shine. So one of the utility of the battalion is the fact that you get two units that basically give you an unbind mechanic, which is nice, like especially since they're not wizard, but they have the ability to unbind both with another wizard spell or an endless spell on the table. Granted, you do take mortal wounds out of dispelling an endless spell. You also get better unbind modifiers the bigger the unit is. So if you want to consider that as an option. They do get also extra attacks if they successfully unbinded a spell. So interestingly enough, they get better in melee. And their attack profile is actually not that terrible if you can actually get them buffed, which is basically, I think, minus two random.
It's one attack that hits and wounds on threes, and it's D3 damage. Yeah, one rend.
One rend, thank you. I was forgetting what was the D3 damage. And they get, what, D3 extra attacks if they unbinded a spell, right?
Yes, they get D3 extra. And then you can add more to that by command abilities like the Knight of Shrouds or Vampire Lord. But, you know, really it's all about that ability here. Now, John, I know that you were able to take a peek into this battalion. Can you give our listeners a good idea as to what the main battalion benefit is?
Sure. As you know, I don't play death, but I too try to keep an eye on things. So this battalion seems pretty tasty beyond the units that you already talked about. The first thing is you're going to be rerolling battle shock rolls of one for enemy units that are within 6 inches of any units in this battalion, which is nice with so many demons out there, you know, that are regenerating units on rolls of one to make them not, have their warp little bubble pop and bring units back. And then everyone else, of course, the odds are that they're going to lose more units if they don't roll that one. So that's kind of nice. But the real kind of spicy bit of this one is, in addition, the Inspiring Presence command ability cannot be used on enemy units that are within 6 inches of any units from this battalion. And there's a whole lot of armies out there that don't have a way to deal with leadership issues outside of the Inspiring Presence. I know my Skaven armies don't rely on that command ability at all because I'm worried about auras and alternate command abilities. But I think a lot of armies out there could find themselves crumbling pretty quick once they stick themselves out in front, engage in combat, engage in melee, and all of a sudden they find that they're just crumbling to leadership. And oh, guess what? No, you rolled a one. No, let's re-roll that and remove a few more models. So this looks like a pretty tasty host. And how many points does this typically come in with all five of those units in there?
If you keep it small, I think it's around 600 points.
Yeah.
Let me do some.
But it's probably going to run not going to run min size units on all these.
Well,
so what is this, usually about 1,000, maybe half your army?
It's a 140-point battalion alone, which is a little pricier than some of the other more common battalions. But, you know, to answer your question about min-maxing, with the Dreadscythe Herodons, you're probably going to want to go for at least one of them being a max unit of 20. Maybe either double 40 of them, or maybe 110 uh-huh. and 120. With the Banshees, you do want to try to make sure that it's a good unit, like a big 12 man unit or an 8 man unit or 8 girl unit can be really effective because of the bonuses to unbind. However, because you are running up a pretty strict, pretty high point bill, you probably are going to see the Banshees just be min 4 person units.
Yeah. I've had a quick look at this now. John was absolutely right. Skaven care not about this. Some of the leadership attacks, in particular the Screams, Flesh Eater Courts, can absolutely murder Skaven. But this one, because it specifically talks about Inspiring Presence and Battle Shock Deaths, neither of which we really take, it's not really a problem. My other observation on this is I like all the rend on these units. I like the multi-wound damage that they do. My concern is that everything hits on fours. You need to do something here with these units to increase the amount of swings you're actually getting through, the number of hits you're going to make. So everything's wounding on threes, hitting on fours.
Yeah, without rerolls, you're not doing anything if you're hitting on fours.
A lot of the benefit of those attacks with that four to hit. So I don't know, 9-1 players, you guys know it very well. How do you improve that reroll that hit roll?
Well, you're gonna want to steer it. Well, you can get a reroll. You can get reroll hits of one if you're within 12 inches of a, or wholly within 12 of a spirit torment, and that can be expanded with chain gas.
But you don't, right? Because like the idea of that army, those units, especially the Dread Type Herodians, is to you're in a Legion of Grief mechanic. Is like, so what I think we forgot to mention is that in a Legion of Grief, basically you're pulsing out an aura of like negative between a range of 1 to -5 bravery. So, and that makes those stress type Herodians really annoying to deal with, because at that point, you're -1 to hit those if your bravery is less than 6. And when you're walking around with like -5 bravery, which is actually really easy to have an AoE effect of that with Legion of Grief, it basically makes armies like fighting the Dread Type Herodians hitting on -1. Like, so they can work as like your chaff units, and yes, obviously they're not super great, and like with the hitting on fours, they do have exploding wounds and so forth, but they're not exactly like, they're not Revenants or like Grim Gas Reapers in terms of like pure melee prowess. But the mechanic is that like they make those enemy units immune, like, you know, they can't take battle shit, they can't be inspiring presence, which is really good against Gits or basically destruction. Or in general, so like, I mean, yes, destruction is not a huge thing right now, but it's an effectively good mechanic in destruction. It's also surprisingly good against death armies, because death armies are not immune to battle shock unless they have inspiring presence. And when you're walking around with a -5 bravery, yep, it's crushing to like even death armies, where like all of a sudden bravery 5 basis on a basis level. But really, it's just to, the battalions are just really good as a way to give you chaff blockers that can basically be somewhat durable, you know, 4+, you know, random -1 to hit. And the fact that like Legion of Grief is actually what you're trying to get is mortal wounds through mechanics that like generate those through a bravery check, not like a battle shock test, but a bravery check. I think that's where that battalion like basically centers the strategy for that mechanic. It's like you basically want those Dry Side Herodians to be your chaff units / your front line. And then you want everything that like basically just starts nuking dishes at mortal wounds through bravery mechanic to sit behind them. That's the theory behind that using that in a Legion of Grief army. But I think the ideal state for it is if there was a single hero that could basically give like better reroll mechanics for like death units, that would be solid. But also there's a pretty good, my money is on the next general handbook as those Dress Type Herodians go down in points, and the Mournful of Mandy.
Oh yeah, they have to.
Yep.
Will also go down in points.
Down in points, huh? Wow. Because I tell you what, the way you just described it sounded pretty scary. Well, I was at a little pucker factor listening to all that. The Dread Type Herodians are just far and away less
effective and the exact same points as Bladegeist Revenants. The sword ghost.
It's just from like, and also they're not existing presence at all in like the meta. I've taken them like one unit to like some RTTs and GTs, and they perform well. Like they're not awful by any standard, but like literally it's just making it, like, it's a handicap. Like, I could have just taken exactly the same amount of Revenants and just been just as effective, if not more effective. So, it's just, mechanically speaking, I think they will probably go down in points. And same with the entire battalion is probably going to go down in points. So, then it's going to become a lot more lucrative and attractive to take for, like, Legion of Grief armies. But anyway, that's my 2 cents about, like, why this one is good and why it's important. But it's also assuming that the meta is mostly death and destruction, because if it's not any of those in your local area, then it's a horrible battalion. it's just because the mortal wound mechanic of Legion of Grief does not care about that battalion. Like, you could take any other death units and then still get that. It's just that that one is just situationally very useful if you're fighting against other death in a mirror match scenario, or if you're fighting against destruction, which maybe you'll see more of, since maybe ogres are around the corner, and then bet you they were not going to have any immune to Battleshock mechanics either, because that seems to be like a recurrent. They want to make sure destruction doesn't have immune to Battleshock mechanics, which are easy to come by. They just want you to use Inspiring Presence for those. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Khorne. Like, this would work against
Khorne. Yeah, new Khorne. Yeah.
New Khorne. Like, used to be that old Khorne took no Battleshock tests ever. Now new Khorne, like, for some reason Khorne has given up fighting, wants to run away a lot.
Well, so, I mean, they just, they're Harakiri, right? It's like the entire thing. It's like, oh, we brought shame upon Khorne. Let me cut myself right here.
We'll pretend that's what's going on. All the lost Battleshock for Khorne is them committing suicide now, and dishonor.
James, do you have anything to plug?
Sir. Yeah, I do. So I want to talk about AOS at Nova. The Nova Open, obviously, is Memorial Day weekend at the end of August. And what we've done in the past 2 weeks is opened up a lot more AOS. I have officially joined Nova Open as a TO their AOS in their AOS division. Yep. So there's me, Chuck Moore, who was one of the Warhammer heroes this year, and Aaron Bostian, who's one of the sort of the biggest narrative event organizers on the East Coast and probably worldwide, actually. So big neon guy. Yep. We've added a number of things. The first one, the event that I'll TO, is the Nova RTT on Thursday of the Nova week. And that is a 64-player, three-round event that we're going to run in the same hall that the GT and the doubles will be in. I'm going to run it as a straight three-way split in points scored between battle points, painting and hobby, and sportsmanship. So if you want to win the event overall, you're going to have your hobby game on point. You're going to have to play well, win your games, and not be a douchebag. You need to do those three things to be our Renaissance man.
So actually what I can do is come in with a beautiful army, absolutely, be really nice, but and still do well enough.
I want to also appeal to the competitive players, those who are interested in scoring ITC points. For AOS ITC this year, the Nova RTT will be the secret sauce at being successful. And the reason that is that there are no other 64-player RTTs that you can get eight players or so who are going to go 3-0, and all those players are going to get around 200 ITC points. That simply doesn't exist in any other event. So it should appeal to both the competitive players, the painters, and the good sports and the good time players as well. So I'm really looking forward to that event. The other big news, it's pretty cool, isn't it?
Wow, that sounds pretty awesome. Right, that's before, on the Thursday, right? Right, so, right before Nova?
At Nova now, you can play the RTT on the Thursday, doubles on the Friday, and GT on the Saturday and Sunday. And the other big news, and this is hot off the press today, is that we have added additional places at the doubles and the GT. So anybody who is on the wait list for those two events has got an email saying we're releasing new tickets. You've got this long to sign up for them before they go on general release. What we've done is we've displaced all those events that did not sell their tickets because of the demand for AOS at the Nova Open. I'm super proud to be a part of it. It's going to be an amazing week.
That sounds awesome. Oh, yeah, are you still going to get to play in the GT?
I'm relying on that as for some of my own ITC points. I've got to stay top Skaven. It's going to be much more of a challenge this year. Much more of a challenge this year than it was last year.
How many people are going to be at the, or what's the maximum sign up for the Nova doubles?
I don't know now. They've extended it. Let us have a look right now. I think they're offering another 40 places for it.
Do you know how many of the signups are at right now?
It was 64 originally. Let's go to Age
that
of
is
Sigma.
Tempting.
It is saying, yes, it was 40 originally. They've doubled it and gone to 80. So those of you who are on the waiting list, you should already have an email in your inbox giving you a sort of pre-order before they go on general release. those 80 doubles tickets. Similar with the GT, the tickets will have been offered first to the people who are on the waiting list, but then they will go on sort of general release once, I think it's a week or so that the waitlist people have got. The other thing to say, we've got evening games now, the friendlies every evening at Nova as well. So that space will be reserved for people who want to play in the Nova friendly as well. So like, there's nothing, there's no other event that's going to give you this much condensed Age of Sigmar in the calendar. I'm really looking forward to it.
And I hope you guys are too. I wish I could make it.
Yep.
I certainly am. This is going to be a blast.
Yeah.
I know.
Well, you know, there are going to be a few other events that are going to be coming up right before Nova. John, I think you have a few things on your calendar. Is that right?
I do have quite a few things on my calendar, but right now I just want to talk about a little event that I'm running this Saturday. If you're listening to this when the episode drops this week, that'll be tomorrow, Saturday, at Game Castle in Santa Clara. We're going to have the Castle Conflagration 18. That's right, Castle Conflagration 18, 18th tournament I've held at Game Castle Santa Clara for AOS. It's going to be a 1,000-point tournament. Other than that, all the normal General's Handbook stuff. We're going to have some nice fast rounds, lots of fun, a little bit of prize support, and a whole good time of hanging out and playing some AOS. So if you're local, if you hear this message, come on down, have some fun. If you're not competitive, come on down. I assure you, it's not going to be a crazy, insane event. We got a lot of fun players. We're going to have Vlad down there. Right. Our good friend Willow's going to join us. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Come docket, join. You know, we do have quite a few events up here in the Pacific Northwest that Jeremy and I will grace the presence of. That would include the Forge of Souls in Spokane, Washington, the last weekend of July, specifically for our listeners out there. That is going to be July 26th and 27th. Just a weekend after that, our good friend Ben Schmoller of Team Chump Change is going to be hosting T-Ship, which is going to be a 40K major event. But for Age of Sigmar, it is going to be a GT. We got plenty of spaces still available. It's going to be in Bellevue, Washington, which is just a bridge away from Seattle. I can tell you guys right now, it is a great time. And first prize is a free ticket to Cruise Hammer, which is a big deal. So,
wow, yeah.
That I was able wonderful. To go on Cruise yeah, Hammer last time was a with a free ticket from T-Shift.
So, you know, that is going to be the weekend after Forge of Souls. It's going to be August 3rd and 4th in Bellevue, Washington. So do pick up your tickets while you can. And then, of course, in Portland or, well, in Vancouver, Washington, which is basically Portland, Oregon, there's going to be the Ordo Fanaticus Contest of Champions, or OFCC. You know, the 40K event itself may not be ITC, but for our competitive players out there, there is going to be a Age of Sigmar GT. It's going to be run by a few of our good friends in the Portland area, one of which is going to be a Warhammer. It is a Warhammer hero, Jeremy Srope from Rose City Wrath. So, you know, they got a couple of TOs there. It's going to be a really good time. And, you know, of course, just a couple of weeks later, it's Nova. So, it could be some good Nova practice as well. Yeah. Fantastic. So, you know, with that, I think that Nova is going to be a really great event. I'm very excited to go to that. And James, I'll be able to see you. And if anyone is at Nova, do say hi to any of us, be it John, myself, Alex, or of course, James. For the Age of Sigmar podcast, this is it. Have a great evening.
Night, folks.
Thank you. Bye-bye, everyone.
Thing. It's an all the time. You don't win once in a while, and you don't do things right once in a while. You do them right all the time. Winning is a habit.